Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. Coming up today, we get an update on the drought from the Water Board meeting, but today is Wednesday, and that means we start with news from the walnut industry.
This segment was sponsored by the California Walnut Board.
The California Walnut Board recently voted to update the federal marketing order and suspend enforcement of mandatory inspections of California walnuts. Over the last year, the California Walnut Board has been working with the USDA through the Grades and Standards Committee to update the marketing order's mandated outgoing inspection process. The federal marketing order rules date back to the order's inception in 1948. The Walnut Board says they are obsolete as market and customer demands have since surpassed USDA grade standards. As part of this effort, the CWB voted to suspend mandatory outbound inspections of California walnuts in an effort to provide immediate relief to the industry, while the CWB undergoes formal rulemaking changes through the USDA. The USDA enacted a preliminary 6 months moratorium on the enforcement of the mandatory inspection requirement, which was effective as of September 1st. The Walnut Board says the decision stands to benefit the industry by mitigating market disruptions, removing redundancies, and eliminating duplicative costs. There's a conference coming up for nut growers. Taylor Chalstrom and Jason Scott join us now with more on that.
Hi, welcome to My Ag Life. Today we're talking with Jason Scott, CEO and publisher of West Coast Nut Magazine and JCS Marketing Incorporated, about the upcoming California Tree Nut Conference on November 3rd. This conference will bring growers together with industry leaders from across all the nut commodities and also provide valuable continuing education credits on important production practices. Welcome, Jason.
Hey, Taylor, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. It's great to be back for another conference this year. Jason, I want to ask you first off, you know, let's talk about the tree nut industry leaders and executives who will be participating in the conference panel on the state and future of the industry. Can you tell us who will be joining the conference for that? And what can you tell us about this really rare opportunity for the industry?
Yeah, so we're excited. We've invited back all the industry tree nut leader executives to join us on a panel. And so we have Richard Waycott, who is the executive for the California Almond Board. And then we have Michelle Connolly, who is the executive for the walnut industry. Richard Matoyan, who is the executive for the American Pistachio Growers Association, and Mark Hendrickson, who is in charge of California Pecan Growers Association. So we're bringing all the top executives together and doing something that is original and unique in our industry. Is we're bringing them all under one roof at the same time, and we're asking them questions together on this kind of united front with an audience of mixed industry professionals from all the different commodities I just mentioned. And so really unique opportunity to see kind of the movers and shakers in one place, have a chance to see me ask questions, have a chance as a grower or as a industry professional crop consultant to ask them questions as well in a live session. And so we're really excited about that. And I think that's something unique that this conference provides that you can't get anywhere else.
Definitely. And I'm sure there's also going to be opportunities at some point while they're present at the conference for growers to network with those executives as well.
Absolutely. We have a large trade show, which they'll be around. They'll stick around. So for a time, so you should be able to catch them throughout the day and during the event.
Jason, another important guest that I wanted to bring up that will be present at the conference is California Secretary of Agriculture, Karen Ross, and she'll kind of be talking about the California Department of Food and Agriculture's priorities for the tree nut industry. How substantial is it to have Karen Ross at this conference?
Oh, we feel like it's pretty important. And a substantial opportunity for us to hear from our state leadership and, you know, kind of have a chance to kind of ask her the hard questions and to see where her mind's at. And so I would encourage everybody in the California tree industry to attend this conference, because it gives you a good perspective of how the state sees some of the key topics that we're facing as an industry. And I think that's invaluable as the publisher of West Coast Nut, and a fabulous opportunity, and want to just really encourage folks between Karen and the executives. This is really a top-down meeting. And so if you're a mover and shaker in the industry and you want to know what's happening and you want to be part of the process and part of the decisions, this is where Tree Nut Ag Insiders meet in November to discuss top issues for the tree nut industry.
We're going to be right back after a word from our sponsors.
The California Walnut Board and Commission provides value to the California walnut industry by working together with growers and handlers to advance the industry. Together, the California Walnut Board and Commission are helping to protect, develop, and grow California walnuts domestically and internationally. The California Walnut Board provides funding and strategic direction on walnut production and post-harvest research designed to help support the industry and promote California walnuts. To learn more, visit our website at walnuts.org. Together we grow. Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower, so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you. Soil fumigation is a critical step to ensure that your orchard gets off to a good start. Trichlor is a pre-plant soil fumigant and is the foundation for a successful pest management system. Targeted pathogens include soil-borne disease and nematodes. Fumigation helps to create a healthy soil environment that allows the plant's root system to flourish. For more information about Trichlor or to schedule an application, contact Trical Incorporated at 669-327-5076 or visit www.trical.com.
Jason, the tree nut industry has seen an interesting course of events over the last year, some encouraging and some quite tumultuous, I would say. You know, how do you really see the state of the tree nut industry currently as, you know, COVID's starting to wind down here? And how can conferences like these improve it for the future?
Well, Taylor, if I had a dime for every time I was asked to pull out my magic crystal ball on the tree nut industry, I would be able to retire by now. When I got into this industry over 15 years ago, we thought that we hit a glass ceiling and that the tree nut industry was going to, the bubble was going to burst. Here I am 15 years later. We're still growing globally as a tree nut industry in California. Product is able to be dispensed all over the world. It's a very portable product. So it's got a lot of versatility, a good shelf life. So I think really the sky's the limits for the tree nut industry. You're right. We have seen some peaks and valleys. Water continues to be a big issue for us, one of the main issues, which we will be covering at the conference on how to better address our water situation with being better stewards of irrigation. But I don't think by any means, every time I turn around, I hear stories about new acres going in, growers continuing to choose tree nut commodities as their go-to crop for their farms. And so I still think there's a lot of potential. We're seeing a lot of growth in the pistachio industry currently. You know, we've got a lot of work to do on prices for all the commodities, but I think we still have some great days ahead of us if we can figure this water thing out and we can become better stewards about how we manage our orchards and be more effective in our timing and in our planning and in our execution of chemicals, fertilizers, and irrigation. Yeah. By utilizing technologies, by the way, technology is it's the future of our industry. It's where we need to go next. It's how we're going to be able to survive this new world of regulations and difficult farming decisions. So technology is a big part of the future of California agriculture, and just another reason to come to the show and network with all these great companies that are going to have new technologies and innovations on the trade show floor. And they have important information and expertise that they can help you with in making critical decisions for your orchards.
I would 100% agree with that sentiment about technology, specifically that within precision agriculture. And just like you said, a lot of those companies that will be present at the trade show will be showcasing some of their technologies or programs or software, whatever that have to deal with precision agriculture really is the future of the industry. So thank you for bringing that up. I want to get your take on this, though. You know, how beneficial is it to have all of the major nut crops represented, walnuts, almonds, pistachios, pecans?
Well, I think, at the top of my mind, when you ask that question, I really think that this is a unique opportunity. Number one, it's a unique opportunity to see us together as an industry, to see what's in common, to learn from each other. Obviously, not everything for every tree nut is the same. We have our own unique aspects of growing, but we have a lot in common. And I think bringing those commonalities to the table and learning from each other and driving from what's worked, what hasn't, is valuable to us as an industry. And so being able to come together, and a lot of our growers that and subscribers at West Coast Nut are diversified growers. These are growers that have acres of almonds, walnuts, and pistachios in their utility belt of crops that they manage and they have stewardships over. And so being able to come as a diversified grower and to hear from all the leaders is a key opportunity throughout the year and a unique one that they won't get anywhere else. So I think it's really critical that if you're in the tree nut industry, that you come to this conference, that you learn more about your own commodity and you learn about the other commodities, because maybe you're an almond grower today, but maybe tomorrow you want to diversify with another tree nut crop.
Definitely. I like that there. And there's a lot of incentives to come to this conference, not only learning about all the major nut commodities, you're getting the continuing education credits as well. It's also free to attend, which is a big one. So a lot of reasons to come to the conference there, Jason.
Yeah, it's a great venue. It grows every year. If you're in the industry, you need to join the, we're closing in on probably 1,000 attendees. So it's a great opportunity to join other ag professionals. The trade show grows every year. We have a free industry lunch. The event itself is free. You're right. We are jam-packed of great information and education. Plenty of people to network with. And so really, if you're in the tree nut industry, there's no excuses. The only place to be on November 3rd is the California Tree Nut Conference in Tulare. So look forward to seeing you there. Look forward to seeing all my friends and growers and crop consultants, and looking forward to having another year together and moving the industry forward.
Definitely. Well, Jason, one thing we haven't covered yet and our agenda is about to go out, and we've talked about some of the panels already, is what some of the featured panels will be at the conference. We talked about the ones with the executives and the one with Karen Ross on it, but can you tell us a little bit about some of the other panels that will be available to growers at the conference?
Yeah, so I guess I'll start out with, we've got the, like I mentioned earlier, we've got an irrigation technology and automating seminar going on for monitoring systems and tree crops. We have a great talk on nematode and how to manage that in tree nut crops. We will have a new technologies talk for monitoring and managing insect pests. And then during our break and trade show, we'll have a post-harvest nutrition demonstration and other demonstrations and information for chemicals, fertilizers, irrigation technologies, new varieties. So there'll be a huge variety of vendors to network with and to get information that will have demonstrations on hand. There'll be prizes, there'll be food, beverages. So just a great opportunity to learn something new and to hear about critical information for our industry.
Well, Jason, that about wraps it up, but I just want to ask you one more thing. You know, is there anything else that you can think of off the top of your head that growers can look forward to with this conference?
I think we pretty much covered it. The doors open at 7 a.m. So be there early so you have plenty of time to network and to see old friends. So the doors open at 7 a.m. You can register at our website at wcngg.com. And then you'll go to the California Tree Nut Conference and you can register, let us know so we know you're coming and we can plan for you for our industry lunch. Just want to encourage everybody, all my subscribers to attend, make it a day. We'll have, if you go online, we'll have a host hotel if you're traveling, that you could stay over. And so we'll make it really, really as painless and as easy as possible for you to attend this event and have a great time. So make sure that you go to our website. Again, that's wcngg.com and register today and join other Ag Insiders for this must attend conference.
Perfect. And Jason, will you remind us where the conference is taking place this year?
Yes, California Tree Nut Conference is in Tulare, California at the Tulare County Fairgrounds. And if you go online, you can see the exact address and make sure you download the MyAgLife app for all your updates, and so you can stay in the know and you get all the information you need for this conference. You can download the app on any mobile device, whether you have an app or an Apple or a PC so the app's good for just about any mobile device that folks own these days.
All right, perfect. Well, thank you, Jason, for coming on and informing us about the conference this year. It should be a great one, and we look forward to seeing everyone there on November 3rd in Tulare.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you. This is Taylor with MyAgLife.
Our news brief is coming up next. We will be right back.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our MyAgLife platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
Here's your news for today. Dairy markets are seeing an increase in supply, with cheese prices still going up as the fall is a big demand season for dairy. However, Mike North of EverAg says there's a lot more at play.
There is a little bit more at play. You're right that this is a big demand season for us. You've just brought kids back into school. This is the time when we're preparing for the big fourth quarter demand, big runs on cream cheese, butter demand at the retail level for all the cookies and the baked goods and all the things we enjoy around the holiday season. And we prep for that. So this time of the year is when we generally are pushing that into the pipeline, pulling prices up, and it's a nice seasonal push. But along with that, really outstanding export demand.
North says the market is currently trying to figure out where the industry will be from a supply perspective.
Very recently, New Zealand announced their August milk production numbers, and they came in well below expectation. Europe put their numbers out for August. That was also lower. And then, oh yes, by the way, in the last milk production report, we got rid of 19,000 cows here at home. We were still 1.1% over the year prior, but that was the smallest increase we'd seen all year. So you're seeing a compounding of strong domestic demand this time of the year. You're seeing some concerns around a shrinking milk pool as we go into the winter. And then on top of that, the U.S. is in a really good spot to be competitive in the export market.
He adds the outlook suggests lower milk prices heading into the next year.
The first half of 2022 is at historically high levels. Now, as we consider the cost of feed and we talk about those margins on the farm, the $17, near $18 price opportunities that are out there aren't going to be super profitable. So when we talk about near record prices, remember that milk price is a derivative of product price. So to maintain record prices through the first half of next year when dairy demand is less, reality is that those higher milk prices that you see today suggest that product prices have to remain elevated. Will the consumer be willing to pay that? Probably not. So if not, that suggests lower prices are around the corner.
That's Mike North of EverAg. Another significant wildfire season means continued efforts to curb and prevent this activity using both short-term and long-term strategies, Rudd Bain reports.
Just before September's end, the chief of the U.S. Forest Service provided a House Ag subcommittee the then numbers regarding the 2021 wildfire season and its severity.
We spent a record number of days at preparedness level 5, which is the highest fire risk level. More than 40,000 fires have ravaged 5.5 million acres of forest, consuming 4,000 homes, businesses, and outbuildings. Resources stretched thin, COVID-19 infection spiked, 4 federal firefighters sacrificed their lives, and it's not over.
According to Chief Randy Moore, as in addition to existing wildfires, the traditional Santa Ana wind season in Southern California could result in more fire activity occurring in that part of the West. While he was discussing how wildfires can be addressed in the now and future, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack that same day offered his thoughts while addressing an audience in Colorado.
Overstock forest and dry conditions linked to climate change are a difficult combination, and it means that we're going to continue to see difficult fire seasons in the future unless we act and act now.
Forest Service Chief Moore likened the dramatic rise in wildfire activity in recent years as an emergency, which he believes calls for emergency measures. In the short term, he feels what is needed is
a stable firefighting force and a modern wildfire management system to ensure that we respond to these fires.
One avenue to increase firefighting force stability was announced in August through a pay increase initiative to Forest Service and Interior Department fire personnel. And modernization of wildland fire management systems is occurring through
improving the use of technology. It also includes upgrading our models and systems for decision-making and strengthening our cooperative relationship
with state and local fire management entities. Yet the chief acknowledges,
we'll never hire enough firefighters. We'll never buy enough engines or aircraft to fight these fires. We must actively treat forests. That's what it takes to turn the situation around.
Treatment of our nation's forest lands, however, will not be a small task. As Secretary Vilsack points out,
we have to more than triple the number of acres we treat annually.
Yet both the Secretary and Forest Service Chief believe
it's essential that we employ an active forest treatment program and strategy to put to work right away and do it through the right work in the right places at the right scale to improve these forest conditions.
And it can be done with methods that are not only scientifically sound and prescribed, but as the Secretary notes, can provide economic opportunity as well.
Improved markets for wood products through new products like mass timber and cross-laminated timber can certainly help underwrite the cost of restoration while storing carbon in wood products over the long term. And these markets will also maintain incentives for private landowners and tribes to maintain and manage their forests.
However, on federal lands,
so much of the timber is of low value that these markets alone are not enough to underwrite the cost of these treatments. Treating more acres is going to cost more money.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The pace of winter wheat planting in some areas is normal for this time of year, while other areas are delayed by a lack of moisture. Here's Stephanie Ho with more.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey has a look at winter wheat for the week ending October 3rd.
Planting progress approaching the halfway mark, 47% complete nationally, pretty close to the five-year average of 46%, but slightly behind last year's 50%. Most states continue to see planting progress moving along at a normal to ahead of normal pace.
He notes some exceptions.
And one I really want to point out is Oregon, where it remains incredibly dry. Many producers obviously waiting for some moisture to be able to plant. Just 19% of Oregon's intended winter wheat acreage planted by October 3rd. That's one half the average pace of 38%.
He also pointed to problems in other areas,
especially across the northern plains, desperately in need of moisture for winter wheat emergence and establishment. We did get some beneficial rain in the last week further south, particularly parts of the central and southern plains.
This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
University of California Riverside researchers are working to minimize effects of a plant hormone that reacts to drought stress. As plants perceive hot, dry conditions, they emit a hormone that helps them retain water. That can stop plants from germinating, leading to lower crop yields. But in a recent study, UC researchers say a new chemical modulator can disrupt that process, so plants can sprout seeds even in drought. You can read more of that from the California Farm Bureau. That's your news for today. We'll be right back.
Does your crop have iron chlorosis? AgroPlantae has a solution for you. Traditionally, chelated iron has limitations that AgroPlantae's Iron Force does not. Iron Force, with its EDDHA chelation technology, can turn your plant's iron chlorosis from yellow to green in as little as 15 days, despite unbalanced soil pH and calcareous soils. From organic certified to conventional micronutrients, AgroPlantae has the product for you. Call 559-498-0388 or visit us at www.agroplantae.com. AgroMiora Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, AgroMiora has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Rootpak R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, AgroMiora can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Rootpak 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today.
The State Water Resources Control Board met Tuesday and discussed the ongoing drought. Drought Response Program Manager Eric Zuniga talked about the current state of the drought and the effects on water systems.
And I work for the Division of Drinking Water. I'm the new Drought Response Program Manager, not so new anymore. And contrary to popular belief, I was not placed in this position to end the drought, but certainly we can try to manage the effects of drought. So I'm here to bring an update of what DDW has been doing for drought-impacted water systems. So in order to organize our response efforts, we've put together a tiered system of classification for these drought-impacted water systems. So our first and our lowest tier is for drought watch systems. So these water systems are issued a drought monitoring order so they can report to the division how their sources are doing and how their system is responding to drought conditions. So many of these systems are doing well this year, but of course, next year could be a totally different story. So we have a total of 104 water systems currently on this list, and that represents a population of about 235,000 people potentially affected. So of the reports that we've gotten from these systems, about four of them have reported that they're on hauled water. Nine of them have anticipated a water shortage within the next 90 days, and 23 sources that we've been tracking show a high amount of decline in groundwater and surface water levels over the time that they've been reporting. The second tier that we have is drought warnings. So these are systems with potential water outages that they've reported to us. These are systems that are not necessarily experiencing a water outage. However, they have serious concerns, or we have serious concerns, about their source's ability to meet demand within the next 90 days. So currently right now in the state, we have about 27 of these second tier systems currently. So as these water systems report data to our division, we work with our Urgent Drinking Water Needs Fund to figure out possible short-term and long-term projects that we can implement that can provide drought relief for these systems. So I believe about $14 million in funding from DFA and DWR Water Resources has been committed so far to these efforts. So one example is Fort Bragg. There's been low flows in the Noyo River resulting in a predicted substantial water shortage by October. So DFA funded a total of $691,796 from the Safe and Affordable Drinking Water Fund to purchase a desal plant. This desalination plant, 200 gallons per minute, was delivered on September 25th and installed on Thursday the 30th. So not only is Fort Bragg now able to meet their water system demand, but a hauled water funding project funded by Water Resources is now in place to allow up to $2 million in hauled water to be delivered to the town of Mendocino and surrounding areas of the coast. So it's a great example of how collaboration between different entities, state entities, can come together to bring drought relief to many communities. So the third and the highest tier is our drought emergency tier. So these are the water systems that are experiencing a water outage and are relying on bottled water or hauled water to meet demand. So we as a division don't consider hauled water to be a really acceptable and reliable long-term source of supply for a public water system. So these are obviously placed on the highest tier for us. So we have currently about 8 water systems statewide on the drought emergency list. So as we become aware of these systems, we work with them obviously primarily to secure the support that they need from their local Office of Emergency Services for emergency aid. And in many of those cases, State Water Board has been providing funding for the hauled water and or bottled water that they're receiving. So just wanted to show a picture of just how widespread these systems end up being, even just the drought emergency systems located throughout the state. Obviously a high concentration around the Russian River area, with a number of systems that have been issued monitoring orders and a number of them also in drought warning. But it's not, you know, yet localized to a particular area. Of course, the number of systems on these lists keeps getting larger all the time, and can continue to get larger as different effects are felt throughout the state. This is a picture of the Fort Bragg desalination unit that's gonna allow treatment of the Noyo River even when the salinity is high from the ocean. It's just a picture's worth 1,000 words. This is really gonna help a lot of people in that community. So just some other updates I wanted to share with you. So first of all, some data issues. So development is currently underway for an improved tool for drought reporting to replace the interim tool, Survey Wizard. We utilize the Survey Wizard platform to develop an interim tool. And because of the speed in which we needed to get that up and running, there was a lot of hard work to get it up in very short order, but we had to make some trade-offs to do that. So we're building a more improved tool so that we can have more robust feedback and better opportunities for analytics, and putting those in the hands of of our staff, and also in the hands of the water system to be able to make some decisions regarding the information that they're reporting to us. So the new portal is gonna use the clearinghouse from the SAFER unit, and it's gonna provide, we're gonna get that launched probably around early November is my estimate right now. The other issues with the data coverage is we had about 88%. Actually, it's not really that bad. 88% is actually pretty good, but 88% reported. Of those who reported, 28% did not report their groundwater levels, and 60% of those that reported surface water did not submit their surface water levels. So we're just, we're limited on our coverage of the data that we are receiving. So we still have some ongoing data analysis that some of our staff are going through to look at production trending and other regional analysis. So that is underway, and hopefully in the future updates, we'll be able to share that with you. Wanted to mention that the SAFER unit is continuing outreach to the counties to get bottled and hauled water programs in place to support all those domestic water wells and state small wells that are going dry. We want to continue to get those programs in place so we can fund the counties so that the counties can help these systems and individuals as well. Finally, I have that DWR and DDW are collaborating on a regular basis to work on drought preparation for next year to capture any potential issues that we might have with the State Water Project and the Central Valley Project for next year. And the other DWR, which I didn't mention, we're working with Water Rights and concurring technically on some of their petitions that they have questions about. We are giving them concurrence with that. So that concludes the update for the Division of Drinking Water Appeals. Please feel free to ask any questions you might have before I turn it over to the next presenter.
Well, I'll just chime in and say I don't have any questions, but I just have a compliment for you all at the division and also the Division of Water Rights. I actually received over the weekend a couple, not this last weekend, but before, a message from Supervisor McGordy, just really thanking our staff for the amazing and responsive work over in the Fort Bragg area. And so just thank you for being so responsive and for the good report. Anybody else?
Yeah, I just want to echo the thanks. And Mr. Zuniga, thank you for joining us. A good presentation and glad to have you on board to provide some, you know, needed additional horsepower for Mr. Polemus and others. I know everyone at DDW and all of our divisions are really working hard to address these issues as they emerge. And these are really helpful updates. Just one question for you, and I'm sorry, my internet connection fizzled out for a second there. So if I missed it, I apologize. But you know, one of the actions that Drinking Water took in the last drought had to do with concerns about communities that were at risk for water shortages, and that was enacting connection moratoriums. And so I was wondering just if you or the Division of Drinking Water was considering those types of actions again this drought, and if so, what that timeline and what that process looks like.
Certainly. Thanks for your question and thanks for the compliments. I do work with some really great people out here at the division. I wanted to mention, so certainly service connection moratoriums are always on our enforcement tool table. They're not specific to a drought. They can come at any point in time when we realize that a water system does not have adequate source capacity to meet their system demand. So we do look at, sort of an engineering time period of about 10 years. And if a water system is not meeting demand in those 10 years in a worst case scenario, which certainly drought kind of brings up these worst case scenarios, then we certainly have the ability to issue these moratoriums. So we are currently in the process of evaluating systems. Again, there's a big spectrum of water systems that didn't have any issues, some that had minor issues, some that had potential water outages, some that actually had water outages. So I certainly, we're going to triage them and figure out what is the right approach in this month of October to figure out which water systems are going to get moratoriums, which water systems are going to get some other Band-Aid fix, funding projects, whatever the solution may be. There's not one size fits all. It's certainly going to be weighed in amongst the other tools that we have. And hopefully that helps answer your question.
You can find more from the meeting on the board's website. That's our show for today. If there's a topic you'd like to hear more about, send me an email to sabrina@myaglife.com. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson from the JCS Marketing Team. Thanks for listening.